This is the CBS World News Roundup Late Edition, presented by Indeed.com.
I'm Allison Keyes in Washington. Cocaine has been found at the White House in the West Wing, in an area heavily traveled by staff and visitors. The president has not commented, but spokeswoman Karine Jean-Pierre says,
when it comes to visitors to the West Wing, they come for many reasons. Obviously, we do have West Wing tours that occur here. They happen in this particular past couple of days. They happened on Friday, they happened on Saturday and Sunday.
Turning now to Philadelphia, where people are shaken after a masked gunman with a long rifle and handgun opened fire around the city, killing five people. Police say the firearms were privately made and untraceable. Now Mayor Jim Kenney is suing two ghost gun manufacturers.
I want the public to know there is no greater priority for our administration than to reduce violence and create safer communities and a more just city for everyone.
We're learning more now about the January 6th insurrection suspect arrested outside of former President Obama's Washington, D.C. home. CBS's Scott McFarlane.
The Department of Justice makes a series of new arguments to hold January 6th defendant Taylor Toronto of Washington State in jail pending trial. They say he was caught outside the home of former President Obama in D.C. last week. They say his van had two guns and hundreds of rounds of ammo. They say he was menacing a Maryland elementary school, threatening a Department of Commerce facility in Maryland, and Speaker Kevin McCarthy.
Ransomware gangs have been releasing the confidential school files of children. CBS's Christopher Cruz reports some of the information is graphic.
The documents detail sexual assaults, psychiatric hospitalizations, abusive parents, truancy, even suicide attempts. The nation's schools are rich in data about their students, much of it digitized and susceptible to being stolen by determined hackers, domestic and overseas, who then demand a ransom for the return of the files. The hackers locate and steal files that not very long ago were all paper-based and locked in cabinets. Christopher Cruz, CBS News.
The U.S. Navy says it stopped Iranian warships from seizing two oil tankers today. CBS's David Martin.
In the first attempt, an Iranian vessel broke off its attack when an American destroyer showed up with an aircraft and drone overhead. On the second attempt, the Iranians fired on the tanker and then departed once the American destroyer arrived.
The airport in Buffalo, New York had a five-hour power outage earlier, and this man got caught in the drama.
It's never like this here. This is just a huge shocker. Like, it's nothing I've ever seen before.
Artificial intelligence is now being used to help fight wildfires in California. Cal Fire Captain Chris Africa says the agency is using cameras that can detect smoke without the help of human eyes. This is CBS News.
Need to hire quality candidates fast? You need Indeed, the end-to-end hiring solution. Attract, interview, and hire candidates all in one place. Visit Indeed.com/credit.
For Civic Media News, I'm Terry Bell. Here's what you need to know in western Wisconsin. Divers have found the bodies of three swimmers who went under in the Mississippi River on Monday near Stillwater, Minnesota. Authorities resumed their search after looking since Monday night. Witnesses say two men were swimming near the confluence of the Vermilion and Mississippi Rivers. When they started to struggle, a third man went under to try to help. All three vanished. This summer's drought is affecting corn crops. Knee-high by the 4th of July is not the rule this growing season. The president of the Wisconsin Farmers Union tells Channel 19 in La Crosse that moisture has been uneven this summer and he's concerned about the time corn is supposed to come to maturity. Aaron Von Ruden says farmers with irrigation systems are faring better. Corn prices are expected to soar if this year's crop is too small. I'm Terry Bell, and this is Civic Media News.
My name is Teresa Barber. I was in the United States Navy, and I served overseas in the Middle East and Africa. Early on in my career, I had a commander that taught our suicide prevention training, and the very next day, he took his own life. 90% of suicide attempts involving a gun are fatal. My way of continuing my service is to help protect my community by being a responsible gun owner and by storing firearms safely. Store all your guns securely. Help stop suicide.
Brought to you by End Family Fire and the Ad Council.
The Maggie Dawn Show.
Wisconsin's manner of funding local government is nearly singular in the country. that cheese stands alone, if you will. It hasn't been working in Milwaukee. It hasn't been working in Rhinelander. It hasn't been working in La Crosse, Green Bay, Madison, Kenosha, Racine. I don't care what you pick. It ain't working.
The Maggie Dawn Show, Monday through Friday at 6 p.m. on your local Civic Media radio station and on the Civic Media app. Up North News Radio with Pat Kreitlow.
I have Corrine Hendrickson, part of the Wisconsin Early Childhood Action Needed group.
We spend $500 on our infants and toddlers on average. If you go to the other countries, you're talking about $11,000 on average in Europe and the other developed countries. It makes a difference. They end up spending less on their K-12 system. They end up spending less on their colleges. They end up spending less on jail.
Up North News Radio with Pat Kreitlow. Weekday mornings 6 till 8 on your local Civic Media radio station and on the app. Pursuing the truth wherever it may lead. The Todd Alba Show. Weekday afternoons from 1 till 3. Join the conversation. Get involved. The Todd Alba Show on your local Civic Media radio station and on the app. It's what's on tap for the Chippewa Valley. 93.5. The Tap. 93.5. The Tap.
Listening to The Empowered Caregiver with Kristen Voss and Liza Hellenbrand. Tonight, it is just Kristen. Liza is on a well-deserved vacation, and I'm really excited for her. She's not had a full week vacation in a very long time. We have a great show planned for today. I can't wait to get started with our guests. We're going to be joined by Lynn Abati-Johnson, a business consultant and global community builder in the digital marketing space, who wrote the book Out of Love about the caregiving experience she had with her mother and her amazing journey of working while being a caregiver. Then we'll be speaking with Angela Howard, the founder and CEO of Call for Culture, an organization that is hacking the intersection of business impact and employee interest to sustainably transform workplace cultures. These two leaders have some interesting perspectives to share to get us all thinking outside of the box, especially in terms of what work is, how to be employed as a family caregiver, and how to get a better sense of what we need as caregivers and individuals. So let's get started. Welcome, Lynn. You have recently published Out of Love, A Daughter's Journey with Her Mom to the End. Can you tell us what inspired you to write this book and what you hope readers take away from it?
For having me, I really appreciate being here with you. I wrote the book because it had to be written. It had to be shared. I realized through my transformational journey through caregiving for my mom and the grief process that not many conversations have been happening around things that are uncomfortable, maybe stigmatized. And when my mom was first diagnosed in 2011, I thought it was a death sentence for me as well. And I just couldn't imagine being on the planet without my mom. And what I learned, fortunately, we had about 6 years, a little over 6 years with her on that, what I call the cancer roller coaster. And so I really gained some tools over those years to not only sustain myself in my own leadership journey emotionally and spiritually and at a soul level, but also practical tools and logistics that I now offer to other family caregivers to help through their journeys of the everyday, in and out, always different scenarios that happen when someone, a loved one especially, is going through some kind of a health journey. It could be anything.
Sure. And isn't that true that it is just a whole roller coaster of different experiences and different feelings? And so what do you hope readers take away from reading that, though?
That everything's going to be okay. My main message for other family caregivers is that you're going to be okay. You're not alone. And that these days, unlike the years that I was going through it, there is so much more support. There are so many more resources. And I know for sure that you're going to be okay, dear fellow caregivers. So,
well, thank you. As a family caregiver, I love hearing that because both Lynn and Angela have had an inside picture to the frazzled life of Kristen, the working empowered caregiver. As I'm trying to sit down in front of our radio show tonight and managing a lot of different fires. So I think that's great. I'm going to lean into that tonight, that I am going to be okay, because you two have already been incredibly gracious as guests, knowing that I'm coming here at the last second. And so it's just, it's a great community and a great message. Well, it's a great message to give a great community, right? To help us feel like we aren't alone and that we can do this.
Yes. And I'm here because I'm with you. And that's what I always say. I'm with you. And even though our circumstances are completely unique, we still have a common thread that weaves together that tapestry that we all live in our daily lives. And what you're doing with the Empowered Caregiver Network and the community is really phenomenal. So I want to be part of more of these kinds of conversations in everyday life. I want it to be mainstream.
Oh, that's wonderful. Well, thank you. Thank you, Lynn. I'm curious, at what time in your journey did you identify as the family caregiver? And at that time of being a caregiver, did you do any research on what that meant for you? Because it sounds like you said there's so many more. How long ago was it when mom passed? You had mom with a cancer diagnosis for 6 years. What year did she pass?
2017. In fact, it was May 1st, 2017.
Oh, and it's coming up.
Diagnosed in early 2011, and I had no idea, Kristen, what a caregiver even was. I didn't even know that was a term,
right?
First of all, and no one in our family had ever had any kind of serious diagnosis, even though my mom did. My mom carried the BRCA2 gene. So interestingly, and if you've ever looked at epigenetics, this is a whole interesting science there. But neither one of my grandparents ever manifested what the gene that they were carrying. One of them was carrying it, and neither one of them ever had cancer. And so my mom was the first that I knew about that was a close relative. And so I did not understand the meaning of the term caregiver. I didn't know there was such a thing as family caregiver. In fact, I just recently learned about respite care giving. Like, I didn't know that. I felt like we were completely on our own, deer in the headlights, hanging by a thread at every moment, and trying to figure it all out and sort through this maze of information all at once. So all of a sudden we had to learn about what cancer even is. Sure. And then we had to learn about what cancer likes and what it doesn't like, and what to eat, what to drink, you know, all this, like supplements, and how the East and Western health approaches complement each other or are contraindicated. I never knew the meaning of the word contraindicated in terms of medications and supplements. And so what ended up happening was that we created systems and structures around my mom's care. And it was really interesting because I always say we almost turned my mom's diagnosis into a business, because we were all entrepreneurs. And so
as professionals, you were all entrepreneurs.
Yes. Got it. My mom was like the original marketer in our family, that before that was even a term. And she was an entrepreneur. And I was raised in a family business, working from the age of 9, facing customers. And so all we knew to do was to build some structure and some systems around her diagnosis. And so that's why in the book and on my website, I provide free PDFs of, you know, checklists and tracking charts and all of those practical logistical things that I knew we would either forget about or we wouldn't even know about in our journey of care for her.
And I wish I had found you a lot sooner too, right? And all the resources, because I know that many of our listeners, but I might not have shared with both of our guests here what our story is. Liza and I are both parents of adult children, young adult children with autism, and then an intellectual disability going compounding with that. And then my daughter has epilepsy. So similar to you, nobody in our family had had epilepsy. So all of a sudden I was a teacher, not just a teacher, but a teacher, right? I was proud of that. But I became, like you said, a business executive that had to manage all these different systems, a nurse, a doctor, a researcher. And it just, it can be overwhelming. And having those tools, I mean, that's wonderful. So let's give a quick shout out to your website as so that people can get to those specific things. I'll let you do it.
It's LynnAbatejohnsonBook.com.
Let's so it's spell that.
Name spelled out. Yeah.
Well, go ahead and spell it.
LYNN, A B as in boy, A T E, J O H N S O N, B O O K.com. Okay. And then you'll see at the top, there's a tab for resources. And then you can just go in and get the, you know, you just put in your email address and.
Right. Exactly. It's perfect. Right. And besides writing that book, you are a business consultant and a global community builder. Can you tell me a little bit about how that has intersected in the world of caregiving?
Yes. It's a really good question because what I do for a living and to generate income is very, very integrated with the story that I tell about personal transformation and my leadership journey. As a firstborn of five children, I was always a natural leader anyway. I was always given almost extra responsibility. And I was that person for my mom. I was that child of hers that was her admin person, her go-to person for everything systematic, right? And so it was a very natural thing for me to put into practice what I've learned about running businesses, growing businesses, gathering community around businesses over all of the years, and then gathering community around my mom and her cancer diagnosis. So all of those skills that I've learned from a very young age have also informed who I am as a daughter and as a business person. And it's not that far of a stretch, you know, it is all really connected.
Sure. And are you seeing that thread continue to travel as you've no longer been the caregiver for your mom? Are you seeing that thread of those consultant skills and global community builder skills into work you're doing today?
Yes, I definitely am. Now I have a better sensibility of who people really are. Their whole selves, and not just who they show up at work as, right? So when my mom was first diagnosed, I was in Silicon Valley working for a global internet startup, and I didn't let anybody know what I was dealing with at home. And now I have that sensibility. Even you'll see me on LinkedIn talking about, you know, how are you really? What's going on with you, not only on your profile, on your socials, on your LinkedIn, what's going on for you at home? So it's made me a lot more curious.
Oh, that's excellent. It's made you more curious. And then are you helping people understand how to bring that in as either an employer or an employee?
I like to think so. I think the more conversations we have about this and the more, again, I'll use the word mainstream, we make these everyday conversations, the more important it is for our communities and our world as a whole.
Excellent point. You're listening to the Empowered Caregiver Show. And when we come back, we're going to keep talking more with Lynn about why she believes that work-life balance is a myth.
If you love them enough to listen to them practice the same song on tuba,
please be done.
Over and over and over and over and over. Then surely you'll check nhtsa.gov/the right seat to make sure they're correctly buckled in the back seat.
Sounds good, honey.
Check today at nhtsa.gov/the right seat. Brought to you by the National Highway Traffic Safety Administration and the Ad Council.
People won't give you the real talk on drugs, but it's time we know the facts. Fentanyl is killing people. It's a powerful opioid, often made illegally and commonly mixed with illicit drugs. It can even be pressed into counterfeit pills that resemble prescription medications. Just 2 milligrams, about the size of a few grains of sand, could potentially be lethal. This isn't an ad to scare you, but it is an ad to make you think twice. Get the facts. Go to realdealonfentanyl.com. This message is brought to you by the Ad Council.
The Maggie Dawn Show.
Democratic candidates are held to a higher moral standard. I don't see Representative McCarthy calling for George Santos to shamefully leave the halls of Congress. It is never principle above party. It is never principle and policy above person and personal achievement for Republicans.
The Maggie Dawn Show, Monday through Friday at 6 p.m. on your local Civic Media radio station and on the Civic Media app. 93.5 The Tap.
I'm meteorologist Mace Michaels. Mostly clear and cooler tonight, lows in the low 50s, sunny in mid-70s on Thursday. Some clouds return on Friday, slight shower chance. High in the upper 70s and around 80 Saturday with a slight shower chance. Into Sunday, maybe a storm, mid-80s. Currently at 75 degrees.
Thanks for listening to your local Civic Media radio station. Learn more on our website, civicmedia.us.
You are listening to the Empowered Caregiver Show, and I'm Kristen Voss, and I'm here in studio with my co-host, Liza Hellenbrand, and we're speaking with our guest, Ellen Merker from Heart Consulting. I'm having a hard time putting Ellen Merker and Heart Consulting together. We've been talking.
You leave that those to me.
I know. Yeah, exactly. This time I've caught Liza's. We've been talking about the need for better understanding how to support people with disabilities and having healthy relationships. And as I've mentioned a couple times, I'm a mother of a 21-year-old young woman with autism, epilepsy, and an intellectual disability. So this topic hit a nerve with me. I know that my daughter, Nicole, is yearning for a full life with different types of relationships, including a romantic one. And so I also know that she's incredibly vulnerable, though, and has experienced some trauma. So I wanted to learn more about how all of these issues are interconnected. And when I saw your group being advertised, I was like, sign me up. I've got to be part of it. Can you remind me what the name? I thought it was interesting what you chose to name the group.
Yeah, it's now I have to remember what order the words go in, but it's Brains, Trauma, and Big Emotions.
There we go. And it's okay. There isn't a quiz at the end of the show. So
okay.
Even if
you
got
trauma, brains, and big emotions. Yes. I think I messed up that order.
That's okay. But we got the idea that there's trauma, big emotions, and brain being discussed. What sparked your interest in developing this group for caregivers?
Yeah. So, you know, a lot of times I'll see clients coming to me for therapy and the expectation from caregivers, parents, professionals that, okay, we've done our part, right? They just have to go to therapy once a week and then we're good. When in fact, if you know, I could do a fantastic job in therapy and do everything right, and yet if they're going home to somewhere that is very triggering for them or is you know, not supportive in some way of their neurodivergence or not trauma-informed, they're going to continue to have triggers and it's going to be harder and harder to heal. And so we really need both paid and unpaid caregivers to understand how trauma really is impacting people's nervous system. There's a lot of neuroscience behind this that it's really important to understand, because when we have a better understanding, we can approach it with more empathy rather than saying, well, they're just being difficult, you know, with these challenging behaviors, quote unquote. But if we approach it from that humanistic understanding of curiosity and just kind of wanting to support, then we see major changes in somebody's healing.
Okay. I think I'm still struggling with why is somebody whose mission is to help neurodivergent people have these rich lives and sexual experiences and relationships, why are you also bringing in trauma?
Unfortunately, so sex and trauma should not go together, right? Anytime there is, I've never understood the word non-consensual sex, because that is sexual assault, and let's call it what it is. Unfortunately, we see this happening a lot. And so I want to kind of address this from two different perspectives, the proactive part of that education and trying to prevent it, But we also really need more resources that when somebody has experienced trauma, that them and their caregivers, their supports are able to manage that, that people know how to report it, that people know how to, you know, work with somebody who is experiencing these really tough emotions after a trauma so that they're not getting re-traumatized.
Okay, that makes more sense to me. I appreciate that. And are we talking about trauma just from a sexual assault angle, or are we talking about it in the whole big picture? And is that why you're referencing?
No, big picture. I mean, this group is for, you know, caregivers whose, you know, son or daughter or whoever they are caring for has experienced any type of trauma.
Okay.
So whether that be sexual abuse or assault, you know, trauma can be from just being autistic or being neurodivergent and being bullied, like all through your childhood, being excluded all through your childhood. That's traumatic. That impacts the way that we're connecting with other people. So there's a lot of different ways that somebody can experience trauma, and it's important. You know, there's no hierarchy here. Trauma is trauma, and we need to be supporting somebody no matter what that traumatic experience is.
Well, I like that you say that. And we did some a show a while back on trauma and some of the work of, now I cannot think of his name, Gabor Maté. I'm mm-hmm. not sure if you're familiar with him. Mm-hmm. And he kind of went into big T and little T as far as trauma goes, because sometimes when you think of trauma, your brain goes to the most traumatic example that it can think of, and really it doesn't have to be that. There are a lot of things that are out there that can be traumatizing to you and stick with you.
Right. I think I've already been educated on the fact that I was thinking, well, is this the right group for me? Because Nicole hasn't experienced sexual trauma to my knowledge, but you know, I know she's at risk for that. But now understanding that, no, just Nicole's existence, having to navigate the world, has caused her to experience trauma because of her disabilities and the lack of acceptance, not just from the outer society, but also from her own family. Like in our own household, we've made all kinds of mistakes, and we've also done a lot of fighting about her and with one another in front of her about her in a way that was really disrespectful, but I wasn't understanding that in the moment. And so that right there is trauma, whether it's a big T, little T, or middle T. And so I really appreciate both of you helping me understand that trauma doesn't have to mean being raped or sexually assaulted, that it can be some of these.
Yeah, it doesn't have to be one singular event. It can be, you know, chronic stress, chronic, you know, poverty, you know, experiencing racism and discrimination. Those are all traumatic events, even if it's not one specific time.
Definitely makes sense.
Yeah. And what are some of the topics that you will be addressing in your course for caregivers?
Yeah, so we're going to be going over sort of self-compassion for caregivers. Caregivers don't get a lot of time to do this, but it's really, really important to take care of yourself as a caregiver. And we're going to talk about why that's so important. We're going to talk about understanding neurodivergence and how, you know, executive functioning skills may impact somebody's emotions. We're going to talk about understanding the neuroscience behind trauma. We're going to talk about connection and healing and what supports can do to really promote that healing. And we're going to talk about how to work with your therapist or the child's therapist, as well as their school, in being more trauma informed.
You're listening to Ellen Merker from Heart Consulting. We'll be back after this short break.
Missed your favorite show? It's easy to find it wherever you listen to podcasts: Apple, Google, or civicmedia.us.
CBS News Brief. Under investigation is how cocaine ended up in the White House on Sunday. White House Press Secretary Karine Jean-Pierre.
Where this was discovered is a heavily traveled area where many White House West Wing, I should be even more specific, West Wing visitors come through this particular area.
During his arraignment, federal prosecutors say the suspect in the deadly Philadelphia mass shooting was agitated leading up to the rampage. Philadelphia District Attorney Larry Krasner stresses.
An entire community does come together despite the horrific trauma of this nightmarish mass shooting.
A man was who was arrested outside of the home of former President Obama, according to feds, learned of the address from a social media post by former President Trump. CBS's Scott McFarlane.
They say his van had two guns and hundreds of rounds of ammo. They say he was menacing a Maryland elementary school, threatening a Department of Commerce facility in Maryland, and Speaker Kevin McCarthy.
CBS News Brief. I'm Jennifer Kuiper.
For Civic Media News, I'm Terry Bell. Here's what you need to know in Western Wisconsin. One man is injured and four men are arrested after a target shooting incident near Elroy Sunday night. The Monroe County Sheriff's Department says a man was shot in the leg and the bullet came from next door. Deputies found four people were target shooting without a proper backstop. That allowed stray bullets to travel across a highway and as far as 10 football fields away. The four men target shooting each faced seven felony counts of recklessly endangering safety. Part of the intersection of Skeels Avenue and Mall Drive in Eau Claire is closed today. You should be ready for lane restrictions on the westbound north lane of Skeels Avenue and Mall Drive north of Skeels. Crews are also working on an alley in downtown Eau Claire. It's east of Barstow Street from Main Street to Grand Avenue. The project should be done by the 21st. I'm Terry Bell, and this is Civic Media News.
Up North News Radio with Pat Kreitlow.
I have Corrine Hendrickson, part of the Wisconsin Early Childhood Action Needed group.
It feels like they're trying to pit the teachers against the parents, and all of us can come together to say, look, stop trying to, you know, divide and conquer and work with us. And they're still trying to hide and say, well, the JFC cut it. There's nothing I can do. Yes, there is. You can vote for the amendment to continue child care counts.
Up North News Radio with Pat Kreitlow. Weekday mornings 6 till 8 on your local Civic Media radio station and on the app.
If I could be you,
and you could be me,
for just 1 hour,
if you could find a way
to get inside
each other's mind,
walk a mile in my shoes,
walk a mile in my shoes,
walk a mile in my shoes.
We've all felt left out, and for some, that feeling lasts more than a moment. We can change that. Learn how at belongingbeginswithus.org. Brought to you by the Ad Council.
Walk a mile in my shoes.
Sometimes I just cannot believe all the storms we've gone through here.
I can only hope that we'll be able to leave this house to you one day, baby. You're our legacy.
Planning for these disasters will make sure we're safe, and is the best way to protect that legacy.
Protect your legacy. Visit ready.gov/plan for the tools and tips you need to start your emergency preparedness plan today. Brought to you by FEMA and the Ad Council.
Up North News Radio with Pat Kreitlow.
Wisconsin's home for daily conversations about the state's latest headlines and stories.
Weekday mornings from 6 till 8 on your local Civic Media radio station and on the Civic Media app. 93.5 The Tap. This is 93.5 The Tap.
You're listening to Kristen and Liza with the Empowered Caregiver Show, and we've been talking with Ellen about the services that Heart Consulting provides for people with disabilities and their family caregivers around both healthy relationships and protection from sexual harassment and violence. So it's been really interesting to listen to how Ellen has helped us see that we need to do this from both angles, right? When we're talking about a neurodivergent population, we need to be looking at the fact that this group has experienced trauma and can be more at risk for sexual assault or misunderstanding. And then also, this group hasn't had a lot of education, nor have their family caregivers, around why it's important for them to be able to have healthy sexual relationships and how to support that. So I've really enjoyed the show so far. And I want you to know, Ellen, that every show we like to ask some powerful questions, which are those that push you to go inward and reflect a little bit on your own personal experiences and thoughts. So my question for you, first off, is since you do provide consultation work for teams, families, and or caregivers, what's one of your favorite stories about a caregiver you have met in your work?
So I do some work with a managed care organization where specifically my referrals are for people who have pretty like really significant trauma. They are living in situations where there's high like restrictive measures, insane like behavioral support plans, really really like strict sort of situations. Sure. And I get called in when, you know, it's a lot of sexualized behaviors and that kind of thing. And a lot of these times it's in very rural areas where the staff, the caregivers have zero experience talking about sexuality, and seeing them sort of open up, being more open-minded to a different way of doing things. You know, sometimes I see them be real stubborn and dig their heels in, but I can think of one particular client where the team has really taken what I've said, done my trainings, and become more open-minded in how they can approach the behavioral concerns in a more trauma-informed way.
That's awesome. Good for you.
And my question for you, Ellen, is what continues to be the greatest challenge, and how do you navigate that?
Funding is always a little tricky, sure. Which I'm sure pretty much anybody running any kind of a social service agency will agree with. So I've had to get a little creative lately, and reach out to some new sort of organizations like Community Outreach Wisconsin, and finding some new ways, because groups in particular are a little bit harder to fund, and I'm not a nonprofit, so it's hard to find grant funding. So, I think the way I've been navigating that is to just kind of really collaborate with other organizations and connect with other organizations, because there's a lot of power in that.
Yes. And I think you've done some good work with that, because your name keeps coming up across my screen, literally and figuratively, for different things, either related to the Empowered Caregiver or to Nicole, because some of the organizations that you're collaborating with are promoting you. And then as I was at a meeting with some of the Team Nicole providers, they said, oh yeah, Heart Consulting, you want to talk with them? Definitely. Because Nicole is potentially developing a boyfriend. I got a text from one of her service providers that it has been confirmed that Nicole has a crush on Ian and Ian has a crush on Nicole. I was like, okay, not quite sure. Yes, it is great, but I'm not quite sure what we do with that. And so they said, this is why you're talking to Ellen, both on the show and off the show. And this is why I'm taking your group next month. So I think your collaboration is proving to be very successful. So again, I kind of want to push you into thinking about some of this from a personal standpoint. How has all of this work and this experience impacted your own journey in life? How are you being affected by all this?
Yeah. So, you know, I get asked a lot, what motivated you to start your agency? And I feel like people always are looking for something really inspirational, but the real answer is anger. I get really angry when I see something that I believe is unfair. And I could either, you know, take that anger and sit with it. But instead I try to look for, okay, so where is my power and where is my control here? Certainly there are some things I can't control. But this was one thing that I could do something about. I had experience in the area. And so doing something is what has really, helped with some of that anger. Sure. But it's also led me down a path of becoming a stronger advocate. You know, I've always been an advocate on the individual level, but this work has really led me to doing more advocacy on a larger level, like with the state and governments and funding. And I did the Wisconsin Women's Network Policy Training Institute a few years ago, shortly after starting my business. And that just gave me so much confidence in my ability to really advocate on a bigger scale.
And what are three things that you would like to say to all caregivers?
So first, take care of yourself. If you are just like drained and exhausted and stressed, it's really hard to take care of others. And this is a huge part of, you know, being regulated is going to help so much with taking care of others. Two, connect, right? There is a lot of power in connecting with people who are going through something similar with you. That's why we have support groups. And there's a lot of healing and strength in that. And finally, just remembering that, you know, we are all human, we are all flawed, but you are doing a fantastic job.
I like that. That's a nice message at the end. And in terms of community outreach, because I know that's one of the other angles, and you've mentioned it briefly in terms of what was the group that you're connected with and you're going to be doing some work with in August?
Community. Gigi's Playhouse.
Right. Okay. And we've had them on. They're awesome. But what was the community outreach piece? Because that's a group you're doing for self-advocates, right?
Yes.
Gigi's.
So actually that's for caregivers. So Community Outreach Wisconsin is kind of like a branch of the Wiseman Center outreach program. Mm-hmm. And they offer various trainings, mostly for caregivers right now, but we may be looking into doing some for self-advocates with disabilities down the road too.
Okay. So let me clarify though. So the one at Gigi's Playhouse is for caregivers or for self-advocates?
For both. So okay. It's going to be kind of a joint. It's for kids ages 5 through 10, and their caregivers are going to be there with them.
Excellent. And then through the Wiseman Center, they've got this organization, Community Outreach Network?
Wisconsin.
And there you're going to be doing what exactly?
So those are going to be multiple trainings. It's not all set up yet, but it's going to be for caregivers to learn about having conversations about healthy sexuality, relationships, online safety, how to talk to kids, teens, and adults about these topics.
Well, and that was my next question for you. When you said 5 to 6, I kind of jaw dropped a little bit because I was thinking, oh, yeah, kids.
Right.
Why not start at kid age? You know, I'm thinking sex, teenagers, puberty, so on and so forth. And 5 to 10. Wait, what? On that note, though, when would you recommend having these conversations with your kids or getting the information as a parent so you can have these conversations with your kids?
Yeah. So kids learn about relationships first at home, right? Like they see the relationships between adults in their homes. So anytime really is a good, I have a 2-year-old, and while I don't directly talk about consent, I ask, are you ready to get your diaper changed? He says no. He says no all the time. And obviously he needs to have his diaper changed, and you can't really reason with a 2-year-old. But I respect that. And I say, okay, how about we listen to one song or we read one book and then we go and change your diaper. Right. So I'm like modeling this from a very young age that you can say no, that, you know, I will listen to and respect that. Again, you got to have your diaper changed. Nothing we can do about that. Right. But modeling that kind of that consent and that I asked as well.
I like that about the whole idea of asking and just the idea that it is his body. Right. And so because you're going into his personal space that you are recognizing and modeling this idea that it isn't my job to just come in, swoop in and do it. It's really more respectful.
Well, and he would have an absolute fit, a temper tantrum, if I just forced him to change from one activity to another so quickly. Transitions are really hard.
I'm just thinking I got to pat myself on the back because there's been times where I've helped people with disabilities, like put on a seatbelt or whatnot. And I just naturally always ask.
I've seen you do that with
Nicole. Is it okay if I
reach
across your lap? Is it okay if I fasten this for you?
Right.
Yes. Exactly. That's great.
It is great.
And especially if you're doing personal cares for somebody with a disability, that is so important. Even if they're nonverbal, you know, putting your hands up, yes or no. And having them point to one of your hands to indicate yes or no, I'm ready or I'm not ready.
That's great. Yeah. Again, I don't think that I've been doing a very good job of that. So you guys have both schooled me. So thank you.
Well, you don't know what you don't know, right? I mean,
right. Exactly. I mean, I'm not going to lose sleep over this, but I appreciate just being. I mean, I think in ways I've been respectful with Nicole, but not in such direct, outright modeling of every time that she has the option to say no for a moment or that I will ask. I mean, I think it's just sort of assumed at this point, but no, I think it's a really, really important point.
And that can come up too with, you know, hugs and kisses and tickles, every kind of touch. If we just start modeling that from a young age, and there's also a lot of books out there, like kids books out there these days about consent that can help parents start to teach kids about their bodies and that you have the right to say no to touch.
Well, and it's so interesting that that's where you started, right? I think what Liza meant I guess I shouldn't assume what you mean, Liza, though we've gotten pretty close to reading each other's minds. But this idea of talking with kids that are 5 and 6 years old about sex, I wasn't even thinking about it from the standpoint of, we're actually talking about consent.
right? Mm-hmm. That's what's more age appropriate when you're at a younger age.
Sure.
It's like, we're not going to start describing to you the actual sexual actions or how to get sexual pleasure, but more that this is your body and you have a right to say yes or no if somebody's coming into your bubble space and or touching it.
Right.
Yeah. Even if it's a necessary touch. Yeah.
Yeah.
So interesting. With this community outreach, what do you wish that more that the government and employers, society at large, all of them, what do you wish the community would do more of or understand better to support your clients and their family caregivers?
Yeah, I really wish that the sort of measurement for quality of life was not so focused on, are they physically healthy and safe, and are they employed? Right? Because like that, I used to do transition coordination, very important things, obviously. But I used to do like transition coordination and case management. And I've had experience, you know, with people getting denied services. When I try to help clients find good, safe ways to meet other people and decrease that loneliness, we always run into transportation issues. Nobody will cover transportation if it's to a social gathering, right? It's only for medical appointments and work. And so I really wish that we could take this focus again off of pathologizing everything and focusing on, you know, are they working at least 2 hours a week? Great, we're good. We've done our jobs. And really realizing that a quality of life is about more than work and being physically healthy. We need relationships. We need to decrease isolation. We need, you know, some people need to have sex. Mm-hmm. And we should be able to help them find opportunities to connect with others.
And, you know,
and that does increase safety too.
Yeah, right. Exactly.
And that just had me thinking, you know, that goes across the board. I mean, you can take out the neurodivergent part. There's been so many times where I'm thinking, looking at my younger 16-year-old son, like thinking, why aren't they teaching about relationships in school and how to have relationships and navigate really, you know, the kids are just stuck on their cell phone. They don't even know what to do when a human person comes in front of them anymore.
Right, exactly. No, I think it's an excellent point. And I also love that as you were talking, Ellen, I was realizing, yeah, all that I've been asked in the last 5 years about Nicole is about vocation. Nobody's been asking me or directing me or supporting me until recently, because your influence, about what do you want her to get married? Do you think she should be able to have a romantic relationship? And one of the things that has been a real concern of all of ours is that she is quote unquote boy crazy, and everybody knows it. Everybody sees it, but nobody's really been helping me until recently recognize that we don't need to live in this perspective of fear, right? So scared that because she's boy crazy, she's now going to be, you know, so susceptible. And we talk about how she's, you know, definitely going to get into a car with anybody who might say the right or wrong thing to her. Why aren't we instead taking this as a positive thing and saying, okay, Nicole's yearning for that. She's looking for that. And so how do we do something to support it happening in a positive way? What a great conversation this has been tonight with you, Ellen. You have taught me so much.
Yes. Good. Thank you so much for the great work that you do. It is so needed, and we are so glad and appreciative that you're out there doing the hard work.
Look forward to having
Thanks for helping me get the word out.
Yes. And we look forward to being at your group next month.
All right.
Have a good night.
You too.
U.S. Kids presents What to Expect When You're Expecting a Teenager. Learning the lingo.
Jelly. Jelly adjective. Jelly is a shorter, better way to say jealous. As in, Chloe, I am like so jelly of your unicorn phone case.
You don't have to speak teen to be a perfect parent. Thousands of teens in foster care will love you just the same. Visit AdoptUSKids.org. Brought to you by the U.S. Department of Health and Human Services, AdoptUSKids, and the Ad Council.
When you're high, you feel different. You think different, you talk different, you draw different, you listen to music different, but you probably knew that. Problem is, you also drive different, and not in a good way. That's why driving high is illegal everywhere. So if you're high, just don't drive. Make a plan to get a sober ride. Because if you feel different, you drive different. Brought to you by NHTSA and the Ad Council.
Don't let biased algorithms, or degree screens, or exclusive professional networks, or stereotypes Don't let anything keep you from discovering the half of the workforce who are stars. Workers skill through alternative routes rather than a bachelor's degree. It's time to tear the paper ceiling and see the stars beyond it. Find out how you can make stars part of your talent strategy at tearthepaperceiling.org. Brought to you by Opportunity at Work and the Ad Council.
93.5 The Tap. 93.5 The Tap.
I'm meteorologist Mace Michaels. Mostly clear and cooler tonight, lows in the low 50s, sunny in mid-70s on Thursday. Some clouds return on Friday, slight shower chance. High in the upper 70s and around 80 Saturday with a slight shower chance. Into Sunday, maybe a storm, mid-80s. Right now it's 73.
Your home for local news, weather, and sports across the airwaves and always streaming on the Civic Media app.
This is the Empowered Caregiver Show with Kristen Voss and Liza Hellenbrand. And in this last segment, we want to talk about some of the current events that have been happening in the news that are related to family caregivers and the people that they take care of. This morning, I got some news about the Joint Finance Committee, and we've been talking a lot in our show about what the Joint Finance Committee has been doing with the budget and the budget proposals, and I was pretty disappointed with this one. They're still making decisions about issues that affect caregivers and their families, but the latest recap around school funding is bad news. The legislature, in my opinion, the legislature passed and the governor signed into law, even though I asked him not to yesterday.
I know, I wrote him too.
I know. He signed into law SB 330, which increases the amount of public dollars that private schools get for each student. That may not sound like a big deal because it's still money going to schools, but the problem is that private schools can refuse to admit students with disabilities, or they can admit them, but then there's no accountability for any outcomes in providing services for them or trying to meet goals for them. And worst of all, what I've heard and seen in the school district I've worked with is private schools can admit students that have IEPs or that have, it's not because they have IEPs. They admit them even though they have disabilities. And then they say, oh, we can't serve them. We can't meet their needs. And they send them back to their neighborhood public school, but they keep the funding that comes with that kid into the private school. Beth Swedeen was a guest on our show a few months back, and she said today as the Survival Coalition co-chair, continuing to expand private schools that are allowed to selectively admit students and are not accountable for outcomes while failing to adequately cover the costs of public schools, which are required to educate all students, is not the right direction for Wisconsin. And part of why I think it's important to point this out, too, is there's a whole other secondary level to it. As she says, this because the legislature's current proposed state budget proposal only increases the state's share of special education funding from a current
31.5%.
Sorry, thank you. Okay, so let's do this again. This is why it's so complicated, and this is where I get frustrated, because sometimes things become so complicated, and I feel like it's almost deliberately to alienate the population, right? So what I understand, and correct me if I'm wrong, Liza, is that the state gets federal funding when a student has an IEP, and then they give a portion of that to the school district as the school district hires speech therapists or special education assistants. But when the state is giving the public school that reimbursement, they aren't giving the full cost. And currently, they've only been giving 31.5% of that cost, which means that the school district is having to pick up the rest, which doesn't make any sense to me. And now the problem, from what I understand, is that we're only going to get an increase of the matching funds or the covering of the special education costs at a 33.3%. And the Survival Coalition was asking for 60%. I don't understand why we can't ask for 100%, you know? And it just seems to me like this is kind of crazy, because now, as another person on the Survival Coalition said, Kit Kirchensteiner, Wisconsin is now funding two separate and unequal education systems. Wisconsin is choosing to increase funding for private schools that do not have to educate students with disabilities and where families have no recourse if their student is not receiving the specialized support they need. So I'm scared. I think this is going to be something that's going to perpetuate more income inequality. We're going to continue to have public schools being taxed with more demands and less funds. And we're going to have private schools that people can afford to pay out of pocket themselves, or they're now going to be taking very needed public dollars and moving to a private school.
It is infuriating, so much so I almost just have to be done with it, because I can go on forever about how this really harms, I feel, harms students with disabilities.
Yeah, because it's putting a stigma on them. It's putting them in poor funded schools. And then we're just going to continue to see a perpetuation of poor performance.
Right. Well, on a positive note,
okay.
On June 9th, President Biden announced a comprehensive set of executive actions to increase the economic security of military and veteran spouses, caregivers, and survivors. This includes items such as expansion of child care, steps to improve employment outcomes for spouses and caregivers, improving support for military spouses during times of transition, and developing resources to support veteran spouses entrepreneurs, which I think is totally awesome.
Yeah.
You can learn more about it at whitehouse.gov. And it was really a bill to help military families, but I love in every sentence, they didn't just say military families, and they said military and veteran spouses, caregivers, and survivors. So it has caregivers splattered all over it. So I love that they acknowledge them as part of the military family and the military experience, and that they need their own set of support.
Right. And that they even need that own separate identification. Right. I know I've been trying to educate people. I was out in vacation this last week. And so I was meeting new people and they were asking, oh, what type of work are you doing? And I was trying to explain what we're doing here at the Empowered Caregiver Community and the Empowered Caregiver Show. And I was explaining that family caregivers are not family members alone, or parents alone, right? Or sons and daughters alone. That it's when you're taking on the responsibility of providing support that people can't do, supporting things that people can't do for themselves. It's what puts you into this caregiver role. Mm-hmm. And that, yes, it's a very fulfilling role, but it's one that comes with a lot more expectations and less training as people are getting into this role for longer. And so it was really interesting to me that I had to do a lot of education still around how what this role is and what it means.
I couldn't agree more. I mean, I am thrilled to see some of the traction picking up. I feel like I want to give myself credit for it. Everything.
I think should.
Joe Biden's been listening to us.
Exactly.
Clearly. but it is. It is because it's a national crisis and it impacts so many people. And it's something that we need to address, because all research and studies and reports indicate it's not sustainable.
Nope. And it's not going to go away. No. I remember when Governor Evers, even though we're a little angry at him tonight because he signed that bill, when he was on the show, he was really, I think, stressing the point that this is a big issue in Wisconsin. It's not going away.
Right.
And that we have to start talking about it. So,
and I look forward to some of those conversations that we are going to have, especially around being a caregiver and employed.
Yeah,
is a big one. But right now, my focus, to be honest, is the fact that you and I are going to go up to Lake Cabin after this show for a little
Working vacation, quote unquote.
For a working vacation.
Exactly.
No, yes.
It's going to be nice. I can't wait to be out in nature and be able to kind of reflect on some of the stuff that we've been doing and what we are going to do. I think this conversation with Ellen was really interesting.
It was. And I can't wait to talk with her more about my son, who has a girlfriend that's going to be attending college with him. So they're going to be alone.
I was wondering if that was going to come up. All right, ladies and gentlemen, we know that caregiving can be overwhelming and exhausting. So that's why we want to end each show with a positive note.
You got this.
And together we are stronger. So stay connected to the Empowered Caregiver Community. Good night.
The RPG came through the belly of the aircraft. We don't talk about the female combat wounded. These are our daughters and our sisters and our mothers. Wounded Warrior Project came into my life and taught me how to stand back up and get back in the fight. The truth is, I think we all have this strength inside of us, but until you're tested, you just don't know it's there.
See how Wounded Warrior Project empowers women veterans like Beth by visiting woundedwarriorproject.org/empowerwomenvets.
As Goes Wisconsin with Kristen Bride.
What is the grand prize? Is it a fabulous cash prize?
You definitely get to take home the cheese. I know that.
I hope so. Humans aren't necessarily logical creatures. Maybe it is.
Thrill-seeking.
It's the thrill of the cheese and the bragging rights.
The first person across the line wins and gets to keep the cheese.
And that's it.
And I think that's it.
As Goes Wisconsin with host Kristen Bride. Weekdays 10 till noon on your local Civic Media radio station and on the Civic Media app.